Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're diving headfirst into the world of cable news.
Right.
Specifically, how things have been shaken up since the election.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with some really interesting numbers and analysis today, pulling from the All Notes briefing, as well as some other excerpts that we've got.
Oh, cool.
And one of the big things that jumps out right away is that MSNBC has seen just a crazy drop in viewership since the election.
Wow.
Almost 50%. Meanwhile, Fox News is actually riding pretty high right now.
Interesting.
So our big question that we're diving into today is this just kind of a post-election blip? Or is this a sign of a much larger trend that's happening in how we all consume the news?
Yeah. It's fascinating to think about, right? Because on the surface, it might just seem like, oh, well, this is just a, you know, the typical post-election kind of, you know, shakeup. But the numbers are so significant that it really makes you wonder if there's something deeper going on here.
Right. And I think that's what we're going to try to unpack today.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm looking here at some of these numbers.
Okay.
And MSNBC's primetime viewership has actually gone all the way down to 644,000 viewers.
Oh.
Which is a very steep drop,
okay,
especially when you compare it to Fox News, who's pulling in 3.2 million.
That's a huge disparity.
Yeah.
And what's even more interesting is when you dig into the demographics a little bit, you find that the gap widens even further.
Yeah, specifically when you look at the 25-54 age range.
Yeah, that's the key demographic that advertisers are after. And MSNBC is down to just 63,000 viewers in that category.
Really?
So that's a potentially significant financial challenge for them.
So advertisers want the younger viewers,
mm-hmm,
and MSNBC is losing them.
Yeah.
And it's not just the overall numbers, right?
Right.
I'm seeing here that even their big shows, Morning Joe, The Readout, 11th Hour, are all taking a hit.
Yeah, it really does seem to be across the board, which, you know, again, suggests that there might be something more systemic at play here.
So while MSNBC is trending downwards,
mm-hmm,
Fox News is actually trending very much upwards.
Yeah.
I mean, they've grown their viewership by 86% since the election.
Wow.
And they now command about 62% of the total cable news audience.
Yeah, that's a pretty dominant position.
It really is.
Yeah.
What do you think is driving that success?
Well, you know, one theory that's been floating around is that viewers are really gravitating towards what they perceive as alternative voices. Mm. People who don't necessarily fit the mold of the traditional news anchor.
Mm.
You know, think about someone like Joe Rogan, for example.
Okay.
Or even Tucker Carlson. These are personalities that really resonate with certain segments of the population.
So it's not just about straightforward news reporting anymore.
I think it's becoming less about that and more about aligning with personalities,
yeah,
and perspectives. You know, there's definitely a sense out there that the traditional model of, you know, objective, neutral news reporting might not be resonating as much anymore.
So people are looking for something different.
Yeah, they want something that maybe challenges the status quo or, you know, provides a different perspective on events. And that, I think that's a really interesting shift.
Right. It does make you wonder, though, if there's a danger in that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it could lead to people just sort of existing in echo chambers and only hearing what they want to hear.
Yeah, that's a very valid concern. And, you know, it raises all sorts of questions about the role of media in society and, you know, how we consume information. But before we get too deep into those weeds,
okay,
there's another really interesting element that I want to bring in. The All Notes document actually mentions that Elon Musk,
oh, really,
has expressed interest in purchasing MSNBC from Comcast.
Wow. So Elon Musk potentially shaking up the cable news world?
Mm-hmm.
That is an interesting development.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating possibility.
I mean, what do you think he would do with MSNBC if he actually bought it?
Well, it's tough to say for sure,
sure,
right? I mean, the guy is known for disrupting established systems, so it's not inconceivable that he could come in and completely revamp the network's programming.
Hmm.
Maybe bring in some new talent, change the format completely, and, you know, who knows, maybe even try to redefine the way news is delivered altogether.
And how would a Musk-owned MSNBC fit into this whole evolving media landscape that we're talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. Would he kind of reinforce these trends that we're seeing, or would he completely flip the script? It's really a wild card, and I think it could have a significant impact on the industry, especially when you consider some of the predictions about the future of media, mm-hmm, and, you know, the potential decline in revenue for these traditional media giants.
Right. And that's something that Jason Calacanis and David Sachs actually talk about in one of the excerpts we have.
Yeah, they're predicting that legacy media could lose up to half of their revenue.
Wow.
If pharmaceutical advertising starts to dry up.
Hmm.
So if that happens, it could really upend the whole economic model of traditional media.
Yeah. So what we're looking at here is not just, you know, a post-election blip, but like a potential perfect storm of shifting viewer habits, declining revenues, the rise of these alternative platforms,
right?
And now the possibility of someone like Elon Musk coming in and reshaping the entire industry from the inside.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating and potentially volatile moment for the media landscape.
It really is. And it does make you think about the big picture here.
Absolutely.
Like, what does this mean for the types of information that are going to be prioritized?
Mm-hmm.
Will we see even less objective reporting?
Right.
And more opinion-driven content?
Yeah, and even more fundamentally, how do we ensure that people still have access to accurate and reliable information in this increasingly fragmented and kind of chaotic media environment?
Those are some big questions that we're going to need to grapple with.
Okay.
But I think we should probably take a little break here.
Right.
Let the listener catch their breath. We've covered a lot of ground and there's still a lot more to unpack.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what stands out to you the most so far? What's really grabbed your attention? You know, it's amazing to me just how fast these changes are happening. It's like we're watching this media evolution happen right in front of our eyes.
It really is kind of dizzying when you think about it. And it's not even just cable news anymore, right?
No, not at all.
The lines are so blurry now.
Yeah.
I mean, people are getting their news from, you know, social media podcasts, YouTube channels, you name it.
Everywhere.
And it's almost like everybody's just curating this personal news feed that's tailored to their own interests and beliefs.
Right. And that's where it gets a little tricky, right? Because if you're only consuming information that's reinforcing your existing viewpoints, then you're not really getting a full picture of what's going on.
No.
And that can lead to all sorts of problems.
Right. And the algorithms that are driving these platforms, they're not necessarily designed to give us, you know, a balanced or an accurate view of the world.
Right. They just want to keep you engaged.
Yeah.
Keep you clicking, keep you scrolling.
So how do we even navigate this? How do we make sense of all this information that's coming at us from all directions and figure out what's reliable and what's not?
Well, that's where media literacy comes in. You know, it's more important now than ever before to really be able to think critically about the information that we're consuming.
And that's something you actually talked about a little earlier. You said that this shift could have some pretty significant implications for our political discourse.
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. If we're all living in these echo chambers where we're only exposed to information that confirms our existing beliefs, how can we possibly have any kind of productive conversation?
Yeah, that was actually something that jumped out at me from the All Notes doc. They talked about how this trend towards, you know, alternative voices could lead to even more polarization in society.
Because when you're only hearing one side of the story, it's very easy to demonize the other side and to just sort of dismiss any arguments that don't align with your own.
It's like we're losing our ability to even have a reasoned debate.
Yeah, it's like we're all retreating into our own little corners of the internet
right.
and just shouting at each other.
And then it's not even just about personal responsibility at that point, right?
No, it's not.
Because it has the potential to really erode our shared reality and our ability to function as a society.
Yeah, it undermines trust in institutions in each other. It makes it really difficult to find common ground and to work together to solve problems.
So what can we do about it? Are we just kind of doomed to descend into this chaotic world of information overload and partisan bickering?
I don't think so. I mean, it's definitely a challenge, but I also think it presents an opportunity. You know, this shift in the media landscape could actually force the traditional outlets to kind of step up their game.
Oh, interesting. So it's like a wake-up call for legacy media to really adapt and evolve if they want to stay relevant.
Exactly. You know, they need to find ways to rebuild trust, to demonstrate that they still have value to offer, and to connect with audiences on a more authentic level.
And what about these alternative platforms and personalities?
Yeah.
Do you think they could actually contribute to a more diverse and vibrant media ecosystem?
They certainly could. You know, independent voices can offer fresh perspectives, challenge the status quo, and, you know, create a more dynamic and engaging public discourse.
Yeah.
But it's important to remember that not all alternative voices are created equal.
Right.
You know, there's just as much potential for misinformation and bias on those platforms as there is anywhere else. So it really comes back to media literacy.
Right. Being able to recognize those biases and to think critically about the information that we're consuming.
Absolutely.
It's like we need to cultivate this healthy skepticism
where
we're curious, but we're also cautious. We're open to new information, but we're also discerning about where it's coming from and what the motivations might be behind it.
I think that's a great way to put it. It's about being an active participant in the information flow.
Yeah.
Not just a passive consumer.
So media literacy is really essential in this new landscape. It's not just, you know, a nice to have skill anymore.
It's just a necessity.
It's a necessity.
And, you know, it's something that we should be teaching in schools, talking about in our families, promoting throughout society.
It's really about empowering people to navigate this increasingly complex media environment.
Yeah.
And to make informed decisions about the information that they're consuming and sharing. And that actually brings us to a bigger question, I think.
Okay.
What do you think the long-term implications of all this are? Like, what might the future of news and information look like 5, 10, 20 years down the road?
Well, it's impossible to say for sure.
Sure.
But I think it's safe to assume that we're going to see even more fragmentation and personalization of the media experience.
Hmm.
You know, the lines between traditional news, entertainment, social media
are
only going to get blurrier, and technology is going to play an even bigger role in how we access and consume information.
So it's like a constantly evolving ecosystem.
Exactly.
With all these new species of media emerging and competing for our attention.
And within that ecosystem, there are going to be both beneficial and harmful actors. So it's really up to us as individuals and as a society to create an environment that promotes accuracy, accountability, and that healthy skepticism that we've been talking about.
So we need to be thoughtful, informed, and engaged participants in this whole process.
Absolutely.
It all ties back to the idea that, you know, the future of news and information is not predetermined. It's being shaped right now by the choices that we make.
The platforms that we support.
Yeah.
The conversations that we have.
This has been a really insightful conversation.
It has.
I feel like we've covered so much ground.
Yeah, we have.
We've talked about the declining ratings of traditional outlets like MSNBC, the surge in popularity of personalities like Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson.
Right.
The potential for someone like Elon Musk to come in and disrupt the entire industry.
And just the broader implications for how we as a society understand truth.
Yeah.
And navigate this increasingly complex world of information.
It's been a lot, but before we wrap things up completely, I want to leave our listener with one final thought to ponder. We've talked a lot about how the media landscape is shifting and what that means for us as news consumers. But I'm curious what you think about how these trends might actually impact future generations. You know, kids who are growing up in this world where the lines are so blurred and the very definition of news is constantly evolving. What skills and perspectives will they need to navigate this really complex information environment?
That's a really important question, and it's something that educators and parents and policymakers are all kind of grappling with right now. I mean, how do we equip young people with the critical thinking skills and the media literacy to not just consume information, but to really analyze it, evaluate its credibility, and understand the potential biases behind it?
It's almost like we need to teach them to be information detectives, right? Like, look for clues, weigh the evidence, consider multiple perspectives before forming an opinion.
Exactly. And we need to help them understand that the information they encounter online, especially on social media, is not always what it seems. They need to be aware of things like algorithms and filter bubbles and the various ways that information can be manipulated or distorted to serve a specific agenda.
So it's not just about teaching them facts, but teaching them how to think critically about the information that they encounter.
Right. And it's about fostering that sense of curiosity and that willingness to engage with diverse viewpoints. Encourage them to ask questions, to challenge assumptions, and to be open to changing their minds when presented with new evidence.
Well, we've certainly explored a lot in this deep dive. The declining ratings of traditional outlets like MSNBC, the surge in popularity of personalities like Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson, the potential for further disruption with figures like Elon Musk entering the scene, and of course the broader implications for how we as a society understand truth and navigate this ever-evolving world of information.
It has been a fascinating conversation, and I really hope it sparked some new insights and maybe even a healthy dose of skepticism for you, the listener.
Absolutely. And as we wrap things up, I want to leave you with this. The future of news and information is not predetermined. It's being shaped right now by the choices we make, the platforms we support, and the conversations that we engage in. So stay curious, stay critical, and stay engaged, because the information landscape is constantly evolving and we all have a role to play in shaping its future.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the changing world of cable news and beyond.
We'll catch you next time.